welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson in Sherlock Holmes, but right now it's the adventures of Sam Spade. Howard Duff stars in the CBS broadcast, first heard on December 12, 1948, in The Bouncing Betty Caper.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Very funny. Certainly took you long enough.
Oh, thank you, Sam. Well, do you like them? My curls?
Yeah, I guess so. It's your own hair, I trust.
Oh, yes, Sam. When it's brushed out, you'll never know anything happened.
Whenever you're ready, Curly.
Oh, gee, you like it that well?
Yeah, very cute.
Well.
To business. To Detective Lieutenant Dundee, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596, subject, the Bouncing Betty Caper. Yeah, Dundee. It all began on a Wednesday. My secretary, Miss Effie Perrine, tiptoed into my office and laid an engraved calling card on the desk in front of me. The name on it was Randall Carruthers. She said he looked like money, so I said show her in, or him in. She did.
Good morning, sir. Do you wish the morning paper?
Thanks. I've read it.
Dear me.
What's the matter?
This ashtray, sir. Have you a silent butler?
I don't even have a noisy one.
Oh. In all my years of service, it has been my constant endeavor to keep things neat and tidy, down to the smallest detail.
I see. Well, if it bothers you, just dump those butts into the wastebasket.
Very well, sir. If you will pardon the presumption, sir, you could use a well-trained servant in this establishment. Waste paper baskets clean and empty at all times. Never allow refuse to accumulate.
That's not refuse. That's this month's bills.
So I notice, sir. I also notice that you have not opened them. From this, I conclude that your services are immediately available.
Yeah, and I conclude that in spite of your glad rags and fancy handle, you are somebody's butler.
Oh, that is correct, sir. I am first butler in the household of Dr. Mark McGraw.
First.
Bleakcliff is the name of the estate. It's near the village of Squid Beach, some 50 miles in a southerly direction on the Pacific coast.
You know, I think I'm going to like you as a client, Mr. Carruthers. I mean, it's refreshing to get a few accurate facts without, shall we say, priming the pump.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
To continue, not counting the staff, there reside at Bleakcliff three persons. Mm. Dr. McGraw, master of the house since the death of his wife, his stepson, Mr. Anthony McGraw, of whom more later, and Mr. Anthony's sister, Miss Kathy. It is on her behalf that I've come to you, sir.
What is her problem, Mr. Carruthers?
The correct form of address is Carruthers, sir, not Mr. Carruthers.
Check.
Yes, thank you, sir. Now, as to Miss Carthy's problem, sir, someone is attempting to murder her. Specifically, she has, upon several occasions, been shot at from ambush. Twice she has awakened in the night to feel the hands of an assailant closing about her throat. And only yesterday, she narrowly escaped death when her motor car went out of control owing to some blackguard tampering with the steering mechanism. And upon numerous other occasions...
That's enough. You have convinced me that she indeed has a problem. What do the local police think?
No one has been to the police, sir.
Why not?
It's a delicate situation, sir. Miss Carthy's brother, Mr. Tony, is undergoing treatment for nervous disorder.
Mm-hmm.
The family did not wish to place him in an institution, and since Dr. McGraw, his stepfather, is a psychiatrist, he is allowed to remain at home.
I see. He's flipped. Huh? Where do I fit in, Carruthers?
Well, sir, if a reputable gentleman such as yourself were to come to Bleakcliff and witness these persistent attempts upon that girl's life, perhaps they could be forced to put the boy away where he belongs.
It's possible. I'm willing to try. For money.
Oh, splendid, sir, splendid. I took the liberty of drawing, in your favor, a draft upon the First National Bank of Squid Bay, 1 week's remuneration in advance of your services to the Bleakcliff estate in the capacity of chauffeur.
Chauffeur?
Yes, sir. I thought that might be a capital disguise. Have you a better suggestion, sir?
Well, No, that's okay. This check.
Yes, sir.
$200. A pretty big weekly salary for a chauffeur, isn't it?
Well, you will be allowed to shop for the vegetables, sir. Your cut has been added in.
All I told him I didn't know one vegetable from another, that I was a lousy driver, and in more time than it takes to tell, I was installed at Bleak Cliff in a room above the garage and told to wait there until summoned. I put on my pearl-gray uniform with the brass buttons and leather puttees, looked in the mirror, and decided I had missed my calling, but not by much. Nothing happened for nearly an hour, and then I got my first buzz. Yeah, I mean, garage.
Phillips, the car, quickly. The main entrance. Keep your motor running. I have him locked in the living room, but he's breaking out.
Okay. Yes, miss. Let me see.
Get that door open. Open that door.
Why didn't you have the door open?
I'm sorry, miss.
Well, get going, please.
Darn it, miss. Where's the spark on this?
What's the matter with it?
Well, it's flooded. The housing, you know.
He's got the meat cleaver again. Tell me, it's just started.
Well, I'm trying.
Get out of there, tell you!
Stop it! Stop it! You're hurting him! No!
All right. Put it down, kid. Put it down. Come on. Give it to me.
What's going on?
Oh, Donnie.
I say, who are you? Haven't you been instructed not to disturb my patient?
I'm sorry. I'm new here. When I saw him coming at Miss McGraw with that meat cleaver, I naturally thought...
No harm done. Come along, Tony. Come along now. Come along, boy. We'll have a nice long talk.
What shall I do with it now?
We'll put it back in it.
You all right?
Oh, sure. I should be used to it by now. By the way, you're new here, aren't you? What's your name?
Sam.
Sam? That's nice. Turn to the left outside the gate, Sam, and drive straight out to the shore road.
Well, if I can just... Hey, I just turned that little key. Look, Ma, I'm driving. I adjusted the rearview mirror so that it showed more of her and less of the rear view. A mile from the house, she ordered me to stop, moved up to the front seat with me, and asked me to drive on. By the time we got to the shore road, she was driving, and I was resting my head on her shoulder. Where are we going?
I've got a little hideaway down the coast. It's right on the beach, at the foot of a tall cliff. There's a fireplace, a little bar, some records.
Got some bop?
It's wonderful there with the surf pounding outside, hidden away from the world. You feel so safe.
Mm-hmm. Don't stop.
You'll like it there. You feel as if there's no one else on earth. Time standing still.
Oh, if I could just be sure that Mother wouldn't worry about me.
You're impossible.
Okay, Kathy, I'll be serious. What's with that brother of yours?
Tony? I'd rather not talk about that if you don't mind.
Well, maybe I can talk about your stepfather. I really should know what kind of a man my boss is.
I go for these drives to forget all that. Please don't spoil it for me.
Okay, Kathy, okay.
Oh, please. The sharp turn into this driveway.
Huh.
Now, we get out here.
Yes, ma'am.
Down this path.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter? You afraid of high places?
Yeah, you just pushed me off of one.
Oh, Sam, don't be like that. You're pouting like a little boy. Come on, I want to show you my little house.
What's so special about your little house?
Oh, Sam, if you only knew what my life is like.
You only knew what mine is like.
I need someone so much to talk to, Sam.
As long as you can steer the conversation, you mean.
Come on, Sam, I'll show you the house.
The path led to a flight of wooden steps that clung to the face of a sheer cliff. There was something like the stairs you find yourself falling down in nightmares. They dropped maybe 200 feet to a crescent of white sand.
Watch out for that one step. It's broken.
Yeah. You have to make your dream house this hard to get to?
Because of Tony. He has vertigo.
What?
When we were kids, he used to chase me, and I'd run down here, and he was scared to follow me. Afraid of heights. He still is.
Oh.
Well, you light us a fire, Sam. The wood's there in the box. I'll go make us a drink.
Fire? Who needs a fire? I'm hot.
What'd you do before you took up driving?
Oh, I was a private eye for a while.
Oh, how exciting.
Nah, it's a sour racket.
Tell me about it.
Nah, let's talk about you.
Here's your drink.
Thanks.
Well, What do you want to know about me?
Who, me? Come here. The scent she was wearing was 20 carat. The story of her life was heavy melodrama. It seemed that Dr. McGraw, a handsome fortune hunter, was a folly of her mother's middle years. But she had come to her senses shortly before she died and cut him out of her will. But that was not the end of it. When Kathy's brother had been faced with the alternative of entering an institution or remaining at home under his stepfather's care, she had begged the doctor to remain in spite of his warnings that her brother might take a notion to kill her. But get this, Dundee, it's real deep. In spite of visible evidence to the contrary, she was convinced that her brother was not out to kill her, but that the doctor was. I couldn't sell myself on that part of the yarn, but she looked so awfully pretty while she was telling it. And suddenly, she didn't look so pretty. An expression of terror was on her face.
No! No! No!
Get down! I rolled her onto the floor and kicked the lamp out. By the glow of the embers in the fireplace, I could still see the gleam of the gun barrel shoved in through the broken window. I hoped he couldn't see so much. I knocked over a chair to give him something to shoot at. He was already halfway up the face of the cliff on those rickety wooden stairs. At the top, he turned and looked back.
Who was it? It was Mark, wasn't it?
The doctor? You know better than that. It was Tony. I thought you told me he was afraid of heights, couldn't come down those stairs.
He never did before. Don't you believe me?
Yeah. Yeah, Kathy. I may wind up believing the rest of your story. I took Kathy back to Bleak Cliff and stashed her in my quarters over the garage. Then I went into the main house via the back stairs, found her room, and shook it down. In a cabinet, a bunch of war souvenirs, German helmets, grenades, rifles, and other lethal gadgets. In a desk drawer, I found a letter headed U.S. Army, Office of the Surgeon General. It certified that one Anthony McGraw was unfit for military service. Vertigo. Origin, childhood injury to middle ear. Downstairs in the library, I found a shelf of medical books. Vertigo. Vertigo was almost incurable, and there was certainly no quick cure. But some patients had lost their symptoms temporarily under hypnotism. Then it said, see narcosynthesis. I did.
Spade. Beg pardon, sir. Mr. Spade. Whatever are you doing in the butler's pantry, sir?
Looking for a butler. Namely you, Carruthers. Oh.
May I serve you, sir?
Yeah. How do I get an interview with Dr. McGraw?
Well, sir, I should... Oh. Strange, after all my years of service, I still start as a master summon. Hey.
You did it again.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. I'd better see what Dr. McGraw wants.
Forget it. I'm answering this one.
You're not going to drop your disguise, sir.
Why not? Who am I kidding, anyway? You rang, Dr. McGraw?
Oh, I didn't ring for you. I rang for Carruthers. I ordered him to tidy up my office while I was at dinner. And look at it.
Looks neat as a pin to me, Doctor.
Oh, yes, you're new here. Chauffeur, eh?
I'm only wearing his uniform. Here's my card.
Oh, detective, eh?
That's right, Doctor. And this one's just about ready to wrap up.
Well, you interest me. Go on.
I will. I think you've been trying to use that boy as a murder weapon against his sister.
Oh. And you call yourself a detective?
If you can call yourself a doctor, I guess I can. You've been treating him with narcosynthesis, haven't you?
Yes, that's right.
Hypnotic drug. While he's under it, you brief him on his activities for the day, and he follows through, including assaults with deadly weapons.
That would be possible with certain very suggestible patients, but I'm afraid impossible to prove.
I think I can prove it, Doctor. You shouldn't leave your textbooks lying around loose. I found out the only way Tony could have walked down that stairway to Kathy's beach house without falling would be temporary relief of his symptoms due to hypnotic suggestion, unquote.
I see. What do you intend to do about this theory of yours?
What do you suggest?
You see this row of buzzers here on my desk?
Mm-hmm.
This one is for my secretary. This is to summon Carruthers, and when I press this buzzer, two of the most hideous plug uglies you've ever seen will rush into this office, beat you to a pulp, and dump you outside the front gate. That's what I think of your theory.
Buzz away, Doctor. I think I like them better than I do you.
As you wish.
From where I was on the other side of the room, I didn't know what had happened at first. All I saw was a lot of paper gushing out of the wastebasket. The doctor sure was dead. His midsection was perforated like a shower drain. And in the walls, fanning out around the end of the room, about a yard up from the baseboard, there was a straight line of holes. I dug into one. What I took out wasn't a bullet. It was a perfectly round steel ball. Then I remembered the wastebasket, the paper flying out of it just before the explosion. In the bottom of it, I found the answer. The base of a steel mechanism with German lettering on it. It was a wartime anti-personnel mine that the GIs called the Bouncing Betty.
The United States Armed Forces Radio Service is presenting the weekly adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
I didn't wait for the Squid Beats Law to arrive. Who could? I went straight back to San Francisco. You, Lieutenant Dundee, were waiting at my office.
Morning, Sam.
Hello, Dundee.
About that McGraw killing, Sam. Mm-hmm. The chief down at Skid Beach has asked us to cooperate with the department down there at Skid Beach.
Squid Beach, Dundee.
Squid, that's right. They say you caught a bus at Skid Beach.
Squid.
That's right. At a quarter of two in the company of a young woman answering the description of the McGraw girl.
They say that, do they?
They say they got a statement from that butler, Carruthers. Well, it's open and shut anyway. The butler hired you, the girl is wanted, and you're hiding her out. Why?
Why not?
Well, it's established that the girl hated the deceased and bickered with him constantly. The doctor and the boy were pals. That girl's guilty, is she?
You've been able to place her in the murder room?
Well, no, but here's an item. She worked with an Army ordnance during the war in research. Subject, I made a note of that. Enemy landmines, anti-personnel. One of the reports she helped put out was on the Bouncing Betty.
Yeah?
Definitely. Hey, where are you going, Sam?
Sam, it's been so lonesome cooped up here all day.
Why didn't you tell me you were with Army Ordnance during the war?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I thought it was unfeminine or something.
Try again.
All right, I'll tell you the truth. I had a copy of that report with instructions for the operation of the Bouncing Betty in the desk in my room.
What the devil are you doing with a thing like that?
I don't know. I was proud of it. It was the only report I worked on with the general.
Should have got rid of it.
I did. I burned it in the fireplace as soon as I learned what had killed him.
You didn't burn it good enough.
Sam, they found it.
Yeah.
Have they arrested Tony?
Not yet, but he's definitely sane. He'll have to take the rap for anything he's done.
I see. Well, I guess there's no other way. Tony didn't do it, Sam. I did. I want to make a confession.
Not to me, please. Not to me.
After what happened down at the beach when I knew I was no longer safe anywhere, I realized I had to do it. For Tony's sake as well as mine. When we arrived back at the house, I looked into the dining room and I saw Dr. McGraw eating dinner. I knew it was my chance to get into his office.
Yeah? Then what?
Well, the Bouncing Betty was in my room. There was some wire in the tool chest, and I knew that Carruthers always went to tidy up while the doctor was at dinner. So I waited until I saw him come out, and then I went in. And I looked around for a place to plant it, out of sight. Then I saw the wastebasket full of papers. It was the perfect hiding place. The whole thing didn't take more than 5 minutes. Well, say something.
I guess I don't know what to say.
Go on, say you hate me. Say it.
I don't. Wish I did.
Oh, Sam. Help me. Help me.
I'm sorry, baby. I am sorry. I don't know how long we sat there. I held her in my arms until she cried herself out. Then we just looked at each other. I knew if I put it off another minute, I wouldn't call you at all, Dundee. So, with my arms still around her, I reached for the phone.
Homicide.
Lieutenant Dundee, this is Sam Spade.
Lieutenant Dundee.
Give me that. Lieutenant, this is Catherine McGraw. I wish to make a full confession in the murder of my stepmother.
I walked out while she was still talking to you, Dundee. I knew she'd wait for you, and I didn't want to be there when you took her away. As I walked over to my office, everything she'd said kept coming back to me. I could see her sneaking into her brother's room and getting her contraption out of the cabinet. I could see her hiding behind the door until Carruthers came out after tidying up McGraw's office, dumping ashtrays, emptying waste baskets. And that's as far as I got. I went back to my office to wait. And sure enough, 20 minutes after the papers hit the streets with Kathy's confession, the door opened and he came in.
Well, sir, I believe it's turning a bit raw out of doors. Gardner was saying only this morning that we should order out some shrouds for the Sepiglossus sinuatus. Am I discommoding you, sir?
No, Carruthers, I've been waiting for you.
With your permission, sir, the ashtray.
Just dump it in the wastebasket.
I am gratified to note that your secretary has been looking after things and has emptied your waste paper basket as is right and proper.
Quite.
Yes, sir. And speaking of waste paper basket...
Allow me, Carruthers. You have come to apprise me of your part in the death of the late Dr. McGraw. Am I in error?
You've already divined my purpose, sir. Yes, it was I who placed that infernal machine.
In the wastebasket, Carruthers, yes, I know.
And it struck me as a bit of poetic justice that the buzzer, which that dreadful man used as a symbol of his despotism, should be the instrument of his own destruction.
I'm sorry, Carruthers. I'll do all I can.
No need, sir. No need. I'm aware that there is no final justification for taking the law into one's own hands. Every man is entitled to trial by jury of his peers. But where, Mr. Spade, where could be found 12 good men and true who would allow themselves to be called the peer of that monster, Dr. McGraw?
Period. End of report.
Sam! There must be some mistake.
Mistake, Effie? Mistake?
Well, the butler can't be guilty. That's old-fashioned.
He was an old-fashioned butler, sweetheart. Where today can you get help like that? Somebody who empties the ashtrays, keeps the waste paper baskets clean, tidies up around the place.
Well, I'd be only too happy to do the same for you, Sam.
I know you would, Doll.
But considering what happened to Mr. Carruthers' employer,
Effie, you mustn't allow your mind to dwell on such matters. It's wicked.
Sam!
Hmm?
Who emptied an ashtray in that waste basket that I just finished cleaning out?
Pay it no heed, sweetheart. I'll buy you a silent butler. I'll go type that up.
I haven't made any mistakes. I'm in such a hurry.
Whatever did you do to your hair?
Well, I brushed it out, Sam.
What happened to the pin curls?
I told you, Sam, when it was brushed out, it wouldn't be noticeable.
Hours of torture, sitting under a hot dryer for something nobody will notice.
But, Sam, it puts bounce in your whole makeup.
I get it. The bouncing Effie caper.
Oh.
Eyeshadow, new shade of lipstick. You look real gone.
Oh, no.
Whom is it tonight?
Well, it's this friend of Maud, Sam. Of course, she's not really serious about him, so it's all right.
Your conscience bothering you?
Oh, no, Sam, no. He's definitely not serious about her. I mean, he...
Well, have fun, sweetheart, while Maud burns.
Oh, well, she won't. And I suppose you'll be seeing that girl at, what was her name? Oh, yes, Kathy.
Well, at least, if I'm not playing in someone else's garden.
No. Well, have fun anyway. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Dove. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Private Detective, is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
The Adventures of Sam Spade on Tuned to Yesterday from December 12, 1948 on CBS. One of the more popular detective shows on the air at that time, mainly due to the chemistry between actors Howard Duff and Lorene Tuttle, it was part of the Columbia Broadcasting System's Sunday night lineup at 8. Nearly 11 million people tuned in for that episode. Thank you for tuning in to this hour of mystery. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now it's on to Sherlock Holmes, an NBC broadcast, with a turning point in the stories from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, where Holmes returns after 3 years gone. This, called The Adventure of the Empty House, heard in 1955.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized new, with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes. And now, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
It has been my privilege in these past few weeks to come before you with some of the exploits I shared with my friend Sherlock Holmes, the greatest detective the world has ever seen. I had to conclude, alas, with the account of his death as he fell into the great chasm of the falls of Reichenbach in Switzerland, locked in the arms of his deadly enemy, Professor Moriarty. For 3 long years, I mourned him, my loneliness deepened, too, by the loss of my dear wife. To pass the weary days, I tried to interest myself in crime as a gesture, so to say, to Holmes' memory. Our old associate, Lestrade of the Yard, was sometimes even good enough to consult me with some of his problems. And so, in the spring of the year 1894, I came to hear of the singular mystery surrounding the death of the Honorable Ronald Adair.
Murder, Dr. Watson.
It's stark murder. To tell you the truth, Doctor, this is the kind of problem I wish to heaven I could have talked to Mr. Holmes about.
Well, we all wish that, Lestrade. Tell me what your problem is.
I thought we might even walk round to the scene of the crime together, Doctor, if you can spare the time. It's a queer business, this Adair case. You said queer.
Yes, I read something about it in the papers. Found dead, wasn't he?
That's right.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Well, he was fond of cards, you see. Never played for very big stakes, but he couldn't resist a bit of a flutter now and then.
No gambling enemies or anything of the kind?
Shouldn't think so. Seems to have been very popular. Anyhow, he was playing at one of his clubs the night it happened. The Bagatelle, you see.
Who was he playing with?
Well, there was a Mr. Murray and Sir John Hardy and a fellow called Moran. A Colonel Sebastian Moran.
Murray, Hardy, Moran. Well, what next then?
Well, young Adair got back home about 10. He shut himself in his room. He lives in Park Lane, you know, one of those big houses. And his room was at the front. His mother got in from a theater about 11:30 and went in to say goodnight to him. She couldn't get any answer. Had the door forced.
It was locked then.
On the inside, Doctor. And they found him dead, you see. All horribly mutilated about the head by an expanding bullet.
What a dum-dum, you mean. Suicide, maybe? Did you find any weapon?
No, Doctor, not a single blessed sign of one. He was slumped across the table with bundles of notes and stacks of coins laid neatly out all around him.
Remarkable. But he couldn't have been shot through the window, I suppose.
Well, it seems the only way, of course, and the window was open. But the minute you have a look, you'll see it was pretty near impossible. Let's go round, shall we?
Right. I'll get my boots on.
Now, Doctor, that's the house, you see. Tall one with the blue railings and the crocus bed in front.
Yes, I see. Quite a crowd outside, isn't it, Lestrade?
Oh, usual sightseers. It's all in the papers, you know. Morbid tastes people have.
Which is the room where he was found?
Up on the second floor, up there where one of my men is. They're still looking around for clues, you know. Body was taken away some days ago.
Ah, quite so. Is the window open as wide as that when it happened?
Every bit. We haven't touched it at all. Step aside there, will you? I'm a police officer.
And taking up the old blooming pavement.
I suppose the murderer couldn't have locked the door on the inside and then made his escape through the window, Lestrade.
Not a chance.
And you see for yourself, there isn't anything you could climb down by. If he dropped there, there would have been marks on the crocus bed.
Yeah, I see.
Well, aren't you coming in, Doctor?
No, I don't think so. You've given me most of the facts. The clue must lie outside somewhere. Young Adair must have been shot through the window.
That's what I said. But whoever did it must have been an uncommonly good shot. He'd have had to stand right back at the roadway almost to avoid leaving tracks in the garden. He'd get the young chap in range as he sat at the table.
Almost impossible with a revolver at that distance.
Besides, you know, there's that cabman's shelter just there by the gate. They say there wasn't a sound of a shot that night. They'd be certain to have heard it. I tell you, it's a puzzle, Doctor.
Yes, isn't it, Lestrade? I almost wish, like you, that...
What?
Well, you know what I mean. It would have been a problem after his own heart. Oh, well. Let's get back, I suppose. Well, if I think of anything...
Be careful, Doctor.
Oh.
Kindly
watch where you're going.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm afraid I've made you drop your books.
You certainly have, sir. Exceedingly valuable books.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't have had it happen for the world.
There you are. Yeah. I picked them up for you. Oh. It was quite an accident.
Well, I should hope so. I should hope so, indeed.
Poor old fellow. You know, I must have given him a bit of a bump. Lame, too.
An old bookseller, I should think. Looks it with those thick glasses. Too much peering over small print.
For myself, you've been studying poor Holmes' methods, Lestrade.
I only wish I could use them on this case, Doctor. Well, goodbye. You'll let me know if you have any ideas.
Yes, yes, I will. Goodbye, Lestrade. I'll certainly think about it. And so I did indeed as I walked back home. The Park Lane mystery, as I'd already decided to call it, if ever I should write an account of it. The first that I should ever write of my own small efforts in detection, as opposed to Holmes. Adair had plainly locked the door himself. He therefore met his death from the outside. And yet, what shot could possibly have traveled such a distance and still cause so much mutilation? And who had done the deed? And for what motive? I was still pondering when I reached my study. I had hardly had time to light my pipe when, to my astonishment, my maid ushered in no other than the old bookseller with whom I had collided in Park Lane.
Well, sir, you're surprised to see me, no doubt.
Well, I most certainly am. How on earth did you know where I lived?
Apology. It's been on my conscience a bit the way I spoke so rude to you when you bumped me.
Oh, but really, you make too much of a trifle. Well, why don't you put your pile of books on the table and sit down for a moment? You look tired.
Right enough I am, sir. You went pretty fast for my old legs. I had a job to keep up with you. I was thankful when I saw you turn into the house here, and I could come up a bit slower.
Well, you have a little refreshment. I've some brandy here, or some whiskey and soda.
Thank you, Watson. I rather fancy a little hock and seltzer. Holmes! Watson, my dear friend. My dear fellow. Here, sit down. You'll fall. Quick, quick. Here, drink this.
Holmes. Holmes, I...
There. Now, that's a bit better, isn't it? There, you're all right now. My poor old Watson.
I'm sorry. I must have fainted. First time in my life.
It was unforgivable of me, my dear fellow, but I simply couldn't resist it.
No, it can't. It's really, really you, Holmes.
Yes, really, Watson. Really and truly. Here, touch me. I'm flesh and blood, you see. The same old Holmes.
But the falls at Reichenbach and the cliff edge.
Yeah.
How did you ever get out alive?
Here, sit back, old fellow. Take another sip of brandy. Here, I'll take my wig and whiskers off, and then you'll be able to believe it's really me. You're the second person, you know, who's fainted at the sight of me today.
What? Who else?
Well, dear old Mrs. Hudson back in the old rooms in Baker Street. Upon my life, I didn't think she'd ever stop crying after I'd pulled her round from her faint.
Well, you see, the deuce of it is, you never help liking your homes for all your confounded ways.
Well, that's very nice of you, Watson.
I hardly believe it now. But when I tell this trade, when I tell the whole world...
Now, not yet, Watson. Not yet. Lestrade, perhaps, but no one else at all. And for a very good reason, I assure you. We are back in harness, my old friend.
What? How? What do you mean?
Well, this very night, provided you can spare the time, A hard and dangerous task, Watson. Are you still game?
Well, of course. It's what I've been longing for. But I want to know what's been happening, Holmes. You must tell me.
A million things, but all in due course, my dear fellow. We have our work to do first. You think you'll be all right after
your shot? I'm all right, Holmes. 100 times the man I was. I'm sorry I went to pieces like
that. Well, it was the greatest compliment you could possibly pay me.
But your escape, man. How can you be so calm about it?
Oh, that was all so long ago. 3 years, after all.
But how did you get out of that dreadful chasm?
Ah, because, my dear Watson, I was never in it.
Never in it? My dear Holmes.
I assure you, my note to you was quite genuine. I hadn't any doubt that I was done for when I stood there confronting Moriarty with that inexorable purpose in those eyes of his that you described so vividly.
Ah, you read my account.
Of course. I congratulate you, my dear fellow. It was the most convincing thing you've ever done. I was even strangely moved by it.
But the 2 sets of footsteps to the cliff edge and none returning, the signs of a struggle.
Oh, we fought together. Of course, there was no doubt about that. We fought most bitterly. But you know the curious bypaths of my knowledge, Watson? I have some acquaintance with Baritsu, the Japanese system of wrestling, and I managed finally to slip out of our friend the professor's grip, and down he went at last, uttering the most horrible scream that I've ever heard from human lips.
You're the devil, Holmes. You truly are.
Well, the only one, however, who's always been on the side of the angels. You know, Watson, at that moment, I suddenly realized what a heaven-sent opportunity had come my way.
How do you mean?
But Moriarty wasn't the only man who had sworn my death. There was another, his chief lieutenant, who had also managed to escape the trap which the police had laid for the whole gang at my instigation.
You mean you deliberately chose to make it appear that you died so that you could delude this fellow into a sense of false security?
Precisely. Well, I began to climb up the face of the cliff.
But you couldn't have, Holmes. It was almost sheer.
I had an anxious moment or two, I'll confess, but I did manage it somehow. You know, I could even hear your cries and see your tragic face when you thought I was gone. I was there above you on a ledge about 100 feet or so up.
Oh, Holmes, and you never made a sign.
It was my strongest card, though, friend. If you believed that I was really dead and wrote of me as you did, then the whole world would believe it, too. And that was why only one person knew the secret, that I was safely on my way to Italy.
And who was that?
My brother, Mycroft.
You could trust him, Holmes, and not me.
My dear fellow, I know you're the very soul of discretion, but you could never have written so vividly and so convincingly if you'd really known the truth.
But the years of misery I've undergone, the years.
It was the only way. I couldn't even reveal myself to you in the street today, because the place was so crowded there might have been spies.
Not because of Lestrade, because he was there.
No, I'll tell Lestrade this afternoon. We'll need him badly for tonight's adventure.
What are you planning, Holmes?
I've been planning all these years I've been away, traveling in Tibet, Persia, France, planning to defeat this last member of Moriarty's gang. And tonight, at last, I think I'm going to get him.
Who is he, Holmes?
Not yet, Watson. Not yet. You see and hear enough before the morning. The game's afoot, Watson. Old times, old times. Come, the adventure, as you no doubt call it, of the empty house.
In a moment, we continue this week's story in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now we continue the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes called for me at 9:30, and we set off on our mysterious journey. His knowledge of the bypaths of London was extraordinary. We twisted through a maze of hidden alleys and narrow passageways until I was quite bewildered. And always as we went, I saw his brows drawn down and his thin lips compressed in the old sardonic smile I knew so well.
Ah, Watson, this is like old times being with you again. If you only knew how I've looked forward to this moment.
Where are we, Holmes? You've completely lost me.
You'll see in a moment. Ah, yes, that's right. I thought so. Along the mews, turn to the left, and we're almost there.
You still can't tell me what we're after?
You know already. Moriarty's right-hand man, the last of his whole gang.
How does he know you're alive? Well,
that's been part of the whole difficulty, my dear fellow. One of the reasons I've had to lie so low. He saw me that day at the falls.
You mean that Moriarty wasn't alone that day after all?
Oh, yes, he was. He was quite chivalrous in his own strange way, but this lieutenant of his must have followed him some way behind to see that all went well. I caught sight of him for a moment when I was right at the top of the precipice looking down and realized that he could see me climbing up.
Good heavens, Holmes.
Yes, he tried to dislodge me, of course, a boulder or two, gave me a few uncomfortable moments, but I managed to get round by another path and elude him.
Did he know for certain that you'd escaped?
Well, I was never sure until these last few days, and that's what's brought me back to London.
But I don't understand how...
Watson, I told you this was the adventure of the empty house. Well, here's the door. I'll use the skeleton key. Ah, yes, that's it. Quietly, my dear fellow.
Dash it.
Same old Watson.
Well, I'm excited, Holmes. I'm a bit out of practice, you know.
This way through here, this passageway. Careful now, Watson. There's a low doorway. Don't bang your head. What on earth's the matter now, Watson?
Something brushed my face.
It's a spider's web or a strip of wallpaper. Can't you see how it's peeling away? The place hasn't been lived in for years.
I still wish I knew where we were.
This is the room, Watson. Now then, look out of this window. There.
Good heavens. Baker Street.
Exactly. We're in Camden House, my dear fellow. Don't you remember it? Exactly opposite our own old quarters at number 221B.
But what are we doing here?
We are here because the window commands such an excellent view of that picturesque edifice of ours. Come closer, Watson, and just look up at the window of our old sitting room.
Oh, heavens. Holmes, I believe I'm almost going to faint.
Oh, hold up, my dear fellow. There's no brandy here, unfortunately. I thought that even 3 long years could hardly rob me of my powers to surprise you, Watson.
But, Holmes, it's you up there. It's your shadow on the blind up there.
I trust that age cannot wither me, Watson, nor custom stale my infinite variety. It really is rather like me, don't you think?
But it's marvelous. I could swear that you were sitting up there.
Yes, the real credit belongs to Monsieur Oscar Meunier, the distinguished sculptor, a bust of me in wax, Watson, placed very carefully so as to cast its silhouette upon the window blind.
I'm out of my depth, Holmes. The whole thing's beyond me. What does it all mean?
Simply that I have the strongest possible reasons for wanting a certain person to believe that I'm up there when I'm really somewhere quite different.
This lieutenant of Moriarty?
Of course, he knows I'm still alive, and he believes that sooner or later I'll be sure to come back to my old haunts.
He knows you're back, then?
I'm quite sure he does. I took pretty good care that he recognized me in the street this morning.
Look, that gang of roughs along the street, they're looking up, watching your shadow on the blind, too, aren't they?
Roughs, you think? Keep back, Watson. Don't let them see you.
Great heavens! Your shadow's moved up there.
My dear good Watson, am I such a farcical bungler as to erect an obvious dummy and expect the sharpest eyes in Europe to be deceived by it?
What is it? Clockwork?
Mrs. Hudson. The good soul crawls forward on her hands and knees every few minutes and moves the effigy round a little to a different angle.
I confess I'd like to see her at it.
Watson, really?
Shh. Listen. What is it?
I do believe he's coming.
Who is?
Listen to the stairs. Yes, he's coming up. Actually into this room. I hardly expected such a stroke of luck as this. Listen. Now for it. Keep your gun ready, Watson. And here, take this police whistle. When I tell you,
blow it. What's going to happen, Holmes?
You'll see. He'll open that window. Something. A sound you've never heard before in all your life.
What?
A sound that isn't a sound at all. An explosion that doesn't explode.
Upon my soul.
Quiet now, but another word. I've got you. Murder, Watson! On him! Blow the whistle, man! Oh, come on!
Dare you
get him! It's all right.
Oh, no, you don't. Watson here, hold on to his arm. That's it. Where in heaven's name is the stray?
Here we are, Mr. Holmes. Quick, Johnson. Shine your lantern. Right, sir. Staples, help us down.
I'm all right. Oh, thank you, Lestrade. I rather fancy everything's quite in order.
What is it, Holmes, in heaven's name?
Why, Watson, just as I told you, the late Professor Moriarty's first lieutenant.
You fiend, Sherlock Holmes. You clever, clever fiend.
Quite so, Colonel. Journeys end in lovers' meetings, as they used to say in the old play. Colonel Sebastian Moran, my dear Watson, once of Her Majesty's Indian Army and the best big game shot that our Eastern Empire has ever produced. Ah, that's an interesting weapon you've got there, Lestrade.
So that's mine. Give it to me.
No, you don't. Never seen anything quite like it, Mr. Holmes. Doesn't seem to have any kind of powder chamber.
No, for the simple reason that it's an air gun of a particularly powerful design made to the order of the late Professor Moriarty himself.
Of course, Holmes. I remember you told me about it 3 years ago.
Yeah, that harmless bust of mine across the way will have been shattered by the missile it fires. A simple, soft-nosed bullet.
A bust. An effigy. You fiend, Holmes.
You've already used that epithet once, Colonel. For a master marksman, your vocabulary seems to me a trifle limited. I'm really quite surprised that so simple a stratagem should have deceived you.
You've not heard the last of me yet, Holmes.
Indeed. Well, are we ready, Watson?
Ready? Ready for what?
I rather fancy a pipe in our old rooms, my dear fellow.
But, Holmes,
you'll find them in perfect order. My brother Mycroft has been in charge of everything while I've been away, and there are still a few details you may care to hear.
Wait, Holmes. If it was only an effigy in that window, you've no right to detain me. I've committed no crime.
No crime? Attempting to murder Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
No, he's quite correct, Lestrade. We do need something a little more definite than attempted murder. And in any case, I think I'd prefer not to be involved in the matter myself.
Well, I must say I...
You see? Instruct those men of yours to release me at once.
Don't worry, Lestrade. Your men can take him away with perfect impunity. Won't you join Watson and me for a little refreshment across the way? As to the charge...
Well, Mr. Holmes, you must have one, you know.
Oh, yes, I have, of course. The murder of the Honorable Ronald Adair. Shot through the open window of his house in Park Lane with an expanding bullet fired Lestrade from that very gun that you now have in your hand. Goodbye, Colonel Moran. Oh, my best respects to the professor. I feel sure you'll meet him in the nether regions.
Well, well. The same old room, Mr. Holmes. You could have knocked me down with a feather when you walked into the yard this afternoon.
There's nothing to how I felt this morning, Lestrade. I actually fainted.
And I was only saying to you I wouldn't be surprised to see a shadow on the blind, eh?
Ah, but look at it. My poor old likeness, Watson. Shot right between the eyes, I'm afraid. Ah, well, all in a good cause.
But what confounds me, Holmes, is how you knew about the Adair murder.
It was exactly what I'd been waiting for, Watson. As soon as I read in Paris that Moran had been the young fellow's partner at cards that night, I realized he must have been the murderer.
But how?
Because of the gun. It was the only weapon in the world with which that crime could have been committed at such a distance, and without a sound, he'd made his little slip, just as his master did before him. So I knew it was time to come back. And I was on his trail at last.
Well, and to think that you were examining the scene of the crime at the same moment we were. Eh, Doctor?
But what was the motive, Holmes?
Adair had partnered Moran more than once. He discovered that Moran was a cheat, threatened him with exposure, and set to work calculating the amounts that he had fraudulently won. He planned to return those sums, hence the piles of money lying on the table.
And Moran followed him and shot him from the other side of the street, beyond the railing.
Yes, but I still had to prove it. I knew if he'd got the chance, he'd turn that gun on me. And I suspected that he might choose the empty house for his purpose, as indeed he did. By the way, Watson, I'm afraid that that gang of roughs in the street you were so suspicious of were really only Lestrade's plainclothes men waiting for our whistle.
Well, you mean that I was mistaken, Holmes?
Yes, just this once, my dear fellow. And now that the race of Moriarty is finally extinct, we are quite free to celebrate the return of Sherlock Holmes. Would you pass me my violin, Lestrade? Ah, how splendid that it wasn't damaged in that fire the professor once started in these rooms. Hey, Watson?
Well, that's a matter of opinion, Holmes.
But we welcome you back, sir. By George, we do. London hasn't been the same without you.
Thank you, Lestrade. I appreciate that very much. Yes, Watson, nothing like a violin, you know, to soothe the savage breast. You know, I really missed it sorely in Tibet.
The return of Sherlock Holmes and a thousand other cases still before him. Well, well. Well, well.
Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud that of Sherlock Holmes. The program was produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Sherlock Holmes, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from 1955. And with cases closed, that's it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.